This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios, where we alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenating radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it working? Can you feel it, James? Can you feel it, MK? Oh, yeah.
I feel it.
And Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-gov license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. And my name is Ben Stone with the Freedom Fiends. And with me on the radio is Megan, MK Lords, and James Babb. And we're kind of bouncing around a little bit here, trying to get all of our electronics running correctly. And this is, like Michael likes to say, it's a teaching hospital. So we might be making adjustments on the fly here. But at this point, I think we're running pretty good. The thing that we wanted to talk about today was a documentary that we've all three been looking at that was from a 1971. The documentary is current. It's just, it just came out not long ago, but the documentary is about an incident in 1971 where a group of activists, of peace activists, broke into an FBI field headquarters in Media, Pennsylvania, and they planned this thing out very carefully, and they broke into this FBI headquarters, and they pretty much stole every piece of paper that they could get their hands on, files, everything that they thought might in any way be important, and then they safely took it out of that location and took it to a remote location where they spent a lot of time just going through it, trying to figure out what it was that they had. And what they found out that they had was way more than they ever had suspected or even hoped for. They knew the FBI was involved in illegal activity, and that's what they were hoping to find some evidence of. But what they found was far beyond anything that they could imagine. And James is actually a Pennsylvania person right up there in the part of the country where this all took place at. So James, give me your overview or your take on all this whole thing.
Well, this is an incredible story, and I got wind of it a couple years ago when the people, the quote unquote criminals, had come forward. One of them was his health was bad, and I think he has since died. Bill, one of the leaders. But the others had decided it's time to come forward. It's time to get this story out there. So a couple of years ago, this made a lot of news in the Philly area. And I read this story. I'm like, this is absolutely incredible. The story of regular people that said, you know, we can do something. And they took risks, and they had the courage, and they really planned it well. And they did this incredible action, and I think most importantly, they kept their mouths shut for so long. they really followed through, and they had an incredible impact because the information that they found, it turns out all these files, there was virtually nothing about criminal activity. This was all investigations into activism, into the civil rights movement, into women's lib. They found evidence, even a Boy Scout troop had been investigated because they were writing letters to a Boy Scout troop in the Soviet Union. They were doing everything except actually investigating criminals. And one of the key things they found on one of the documents referenced something called COINTELPRO. And they didn't know what that was at the time, but it basically opened the door when the additional information was requested. And this was became a tip of the iceberg that ended up releasing like 50,000 other documents relating to COINTELPRO, which was the FBI's campaign to infiltrate and disrupt political activists. And it really stunned a lot of people. And this was at a time when people actually cared about this kind of stuff. So I think as rare as I could.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. These people were really heroic, and they called themselves the Citizens Commission to Investigate the FBI. And what their discoveries led to was the Church Committee, which some people are more familiar with. They did expose COINTELPRO, which at the time was an operation to destabilize all these activist groups. And a lot of the people in that, in these activist groups, like the Black Panthers and SNCC and, you know, different women's liberation groups, they had a suspicion that the government was disrupting them and, you know, trying to sow discord among their members. And for instance, the Black Panthers ended up splitting up over these techniques. And there was a lot of distrust of the government, and a lot of people kind of had a hunch that they were doing something disruptive to activists, but they didn't have any solid evidence of it, and it was hard for them to prove it. And yeah, this COINTELPRO operation ended up being on one of the documents. And what they did is they copied all of these documents and they mailed them off to major newspapers. And the FBI even told some of these major newspapers, they were like, oh yes, these are the actual documents. But it was kind of in a way so that, you know, they were hoping like, so cooperate with us and give us the documents back and you don't have to print this, you know. But for example, the Washington Post ended up printing it, and it ended up leading to the Church Committee, and they investigated the FBI for this and discovered just some atrocious things. I mean, even infiltrating the KKK, for example, at one point, I think it was something like one in four KKK members was an FBI agent. And these FBI agents were main agitators in the violence and murders of Black activists. So the FBI agitated these things, and they also agitated within Black activist groups, too. And they would do things like turn people against each other, plant notes that were not true, basically, that were saying, oh, this person was meeting with this person or sharing this crucial information, to just completely destabilize. And yeah, I mean, it's just amazing. It really shows the lengths that the FBI will go to disrupt things that are, you know, pushing society in what I think is a positive, progressive direction.
It was incredible. They even, one example they gave was how they had proof about how one FBI agent was bragging about he had destroyed some activist marriage by making up lies and making one think that the other was cheating. And he's like, hey, look, I made them split up. Ooh, look how cool I am.
What disgusting people.
Yeah, it's really disturbing things.
Horrible. Yeah. Like the worst of humanity. These people were scum, absolute scum. And they did far worse than that, including that letter to Martin Luther King where they tried to convince him to commit suicide.
Yes.
Before he received his Peace Prize, they said, there's only one thing left for you to do, and you have 34 days to do it.
Wow.
Like, I mean, disgusting, absolutely disgusting. But, you know, I think what makes this story neat, and in fact, people can find this, this documentary is available on PBS. It's on the website right now. People can go to it. I think it said that they're going to be showing it on the website until maybe June, sometime in June at least. So it's up a while. I also found it on my Apple TV using the PBS app. There's an app on your Apple TV. This might be on other like smart TVs. If you have a PBS app on your smart TV, you can watch it there. It's totally free. Definitely worth watching. You know, Keith Forsyth is one of the people that took this action. He was the locksmith. He was the first one in to the media FBI building, and his job was to pick the lock and get the others in there. And he had some, you know, he had some great things to say. I had the privilege of meeting Keith when they did a Philadelphia premiere showing of this documentary, and he was one of the spoke about it afterwards, and I got to shake his hand. This guy is, you know, I would say he's incredible, but he's just like everybody else we know. He's not some kind of superhero. He's just a regular guy that rose to the occasion and did something extraordinary. And what he said got him motivated was the Jackson State killings. And I hadn't even heard about this. You know, we've heard about the Kent State killings, but there was another shooting at Jackson State in Mississippi, where a bunch of students were fired on, and he said he heard this. He was following it, and I guess there was a recording, and it was machine gun fire went on and on and on and on, and he said, you know, I have to do something about these bastards. And so he made a commitment to, he wanted to damage this war machine. And they, you know, breaking into draft boards was a key front for them back there. In fact, I don't know if it was mentioned in the documentary or if he mentioned this afterwards, but he said there were over 300 actions against draft boards around this time. Can Wow. you believe that? 300.
That's amazing. And he was also a member of the Camden 28, and they broke into a draft board and ended up being caught. Him and Robert Williamson, and they thought that, you know, that was the end. They thought that they were caught, and that was two of the people who were involved in the, you know, ones featured in the documentary. But they ended up basically getting out of it. And from what I understand, it was were jury nullification tactics involved in this too?
Yeah, yeah. This was well, after the media operation, Keith wanted to get into another operation. And, you know, so some people asked him to break into the federal building in Camden, New Jersey. And he said he had some reservations about it. He didn't really like a lot of the people involved, but this was the only thing going on. So it was like, well, I either do this or do nothing. So he went for it. And it turns out the whole thing was an FBI setup from the beginning.
Wow.
So these 28 people were basically set up. They were facing 47 years in jail for this, okay? 47, okay?
This is
mean,
insane.
Just put that into perspective, okay? 47 years. They're on trial, and they had two sort of parallel defenses, one of which was the jury nullification defense that just said, look, yeah, we did it, but, you know, we needed to do it. This is, you know, look at what the FBI has been doing, because now this is after all this media stuff and all the COINTELPRO and the public opinion of the FBI is in the garbage. Okay, so they were able to even use some of this these new revelations in cross examining the FBI. So they really made the FBI look bad. But this jury nullification was a key part of the defense. Also, they had an entrapment defense. They said, you know, this is entrapment, which was at the time considered also a no-no. So we can get into that when we come back from the break.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts. Just shoving the truth right into your ear hole, right here on the radio. My name's Ben Stone. With me is MK Lords and James Babb. So before the break, Jim, you were talking about the strategies that the accused were doing. Go ahead and take off on that.
Right. This was the Camden 28, which was two of the same people that had been involved in the media operation, although nobody knew it at the time except for them. This was a FBI setup where they were tricked into breaking into the FBI and everyone was busted. It was a federal building it had been tricked into breaking into as a setup. Now, it sort of took some of the heat off the investigation of the media group because they thought they had everybody. They're like, okay, these are the people. We got them. We got them dead to rights. We're going to send them to jail. They were facing 47 years in prison for this. And their parallel strategies involved jury nullification, which was basically saying, yeah, we did it, but you should still say we're not guilty because we did the right thing. And a jury has that right to vote their conscience and say not guilty. And the other parallel strategy was entrapment. that this is entrapment. Now, today we know that's basically all the FBI does, right? I can't remember a story in recent years where the FBI actually arrested anybody and it wasn't like a manufactured crime by them. But at the time, I guess this was considered unusual. And the lawyer said, you know, he said, well, we both defenses were really important because the jury, they needed to be able to like go home and explain to their conservative neighbors why they voted not guilty. They needed a way to explain it to people that maybe supported the Vietnam War and thought these hippies really deserved it. So entrapment sort of gave them something, a way to explain their not guilty vote. But it really was a jury nullification verdict because basically they were dead to rights. They everybody knew they had broken in. But in the end, that jury found them not guilty, and that was an incredible victory. I mean, they must have been sweating bullets for that one.
Especially since they all turned down a plea bargain, too, which they would have they could have pled guilty to a single misdemeanor charge, and the rest of the charges would be dropped. And all 28 of them decided that they would not take the plea.
Wow.
And they would be put on trial. And I think Jim said earlier, it was 47 years in jail. That's incredible. That's such courage and bravery. And I wanted to kind of back up to the informant part of the raid where it really was entrapment, and the FBI should really change its name to the Federal Bureau of Entrapment, because this is what they do. So the guy who agreed to become an informant, he was kind of torn between opposing the war and also opposing the group's plan to infiltrate. But he ended up helping with the FBI. And they basically told him that, oh, if you help us out, you know, we'll supply you with all of this training and, you know, tools. But no one will, you know, when you're caught, when they're all caught, they're not going to face a trial. You know, they're not going to face any time in jail. And basically, they just lied to him. And this is what you can expect if you were, you know, approached by the FBI to get in some kind of one of their crazy scams or whatever it is. You have to be really, really cautious. They're always able to lie to you. All law enforcement is basically legally able to lie to you. So it never is a good idea to become an informant or a snitch. And, you know, thankfully, these people were able to get out of the situation. And yeah, it was a very positive use of jury nullification, but it could have gone very badly. And that the FBI still does these things unrestrained is you know, also a disturbing thing.
And that's in spite of the fact that, like with the Church Commission and other activities by Congress and people in Washington attempting to rein in the FBI and get them to start behaving like they're supposed to behave, in spite of all the efforts to do so, the FBI, even now, 40 years later, 45 years later, whatever it is, behaves in exactly the same way as it did back then. It still uses these same methods of entrapment. It still infiltrates groups with whatever means possible. It still incites and actually plans out crimes and then entices people to do them, including, you know, putting people who are maybe not the brightest in the group, or people who are having real financial trouble, putting them into positions where they can use that as leverage in order to get them to behave the way that they want. It's really pretty disgusting behavior. And for listeners,
it's appalling.
Go ahead. Oh, well, actually, we're going to go away to break. We lost James, but hopefully we'll get him back before the next before the commercial's over with. Stick with us while we go to the market.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CatMuff, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CatMuff, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Fiend phone, fiend phone.
Freedom Fiends. Coming back. We've lost Jim temporarily, but hopefully he'll pop back in as we're going along here. But what MK and I were talking about during the break is kind of an interesting thing. There was 28 people, and they all agreed to not take a plea. Isn't that crazy?
This is crazy. This is the Camden 28, and they're known for breaking into draft offices to destroy draft documents, and they ended up getting caught and put on trial, and they were offered a plea deal, and all 28 people turned it down and chose to go to trial instead. And the trial ended in jury nullification, which is a really useful tactic if people are aware of it and apply it to people who are being tried using unjust laws, and especially when the government's involved in setting them up, as they were in this particular instance. So yeah, we were talking about how hard it would be to get 28 people to agree on something. And you know, I've experienced this too with certain types of activism and trying to work with different groups, different activist groups. And yeah, it is very difficult to agree on a strategy. And there is also, I think, still that air of distrust. And I think it comes from these discoveries like COINTELPRO, where they found out that the FBI was infiltrating activist groups and purposely trying to split them up when they were, especially if they were showing a unified front like the Black Panthers. And so there is still that level of paranoia and distrust hasn't quite gone away among activist circles. And, you know, I still think the FBI was a huge influence on that. And, you know, it does make organizing very difficult. So what have you experienced in this regard, Ben?
I agree with everything you just said. You know, I've had occasions to try to organize some things, not only, you know, just normal things like just get-togethers of one kind or another, a meet and greet at a restaurant or whatever, and it's just a nightmare. The more people, you get beyond about four or five people, and it just gets crazy difficult. And, you know, going back last week on Freedom Fiends, I gave kind of a hint into my criminal background that I left many, many, many years ago, 35 years ago, that I've been out of that world. But back in those days, I actually did arrange a thing that I'm not going to go into here on the radio. I'll tease about it a little bit. But in that situation, I brought in four people. And I was more comfortable if we would have kept it at three, but we needed a fourth guy with a car for the situation. And four people is really difficult to coordinate and get them to do something that they know could cause great bodily damage or possibly an encounter with authorities. And so to try to organize 28 people to do something like that just is mind-boggling to me. But then to arrange 28 people to coordinate them to not take a plea bargain, for every single one of them to hold their ground, to not rat out their fellows, and not, you know, to hold the line and stick with no plea and fight it through. Man, that's pretty amazing considering the amount of time they were looking at and the time frame. There was, you know, it was not, I remember 1971, I remember the early 70s really clearly. And being a peace activist, it was very popular among peace activists, but among the general population, those people were hated. They were absolutely hated.
Yeah, there was still, from what I've kind of looked at the time, that, you know, a strong sense of trust in the FBI and in the government. And, you know, there wasn't that understanding that the government was actually trying to undermine and infiltrate these people who were trying to, you know, push society, I think, in the right direction. You know, especially in regards to things like civil rights and women's rights, people were not ready to really take that leap. And these activists who were trying trying to encourage us push in that direction. We're being stopped at every turn, specifically by the FBI. And I mean, Herbert Hoover, I mean, someone who's so power hungry. I mean, if you look into some of the people, he would target individuals too and completely ruin their lives in these activist groups. And it's just amazing that, you know, for all of the suspicion that had been going on for so long within activist groups, they finally discovered, you know, this other group, the group in the 1971 documentary, they finally discovered that this was actually happening, that this was something called COINTELPRO, and they could finally prove it. And hopefully it led to the Church Committee, and hopefully it would lead to reforms. And I think their actions, this Citizens Commission to Investigate the FBI, who discovered the documents with COINTELPRO, I think they were very heroic. And But I wonder how much reform they were able to get done with the Church Committee, and how much of this kind of pushed, basically made the FBI push their counter-activism tactics even, you know, more underground. So what do you think about that? What do you see that there were some maybe positive reforms made? It seems like for a short while after that, there was a crackdown on the FBI, you know, by Congress. But what do you think about the long-term effects?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, I hate to make this comparison, but a lot of our listeners are going to understand I'm going to have a hard time sewing these two thoughts together, but a lot of our listeners will understand that the war on drugs, a prohibition against some kinds of drugs, will create a market for more deadly kinds of drugs. So in other words, if you make a law and you start enforcing a law against the use or distribution or growing or selling or whatever of marijuana, you're going to make it more profitable for criminals to introduce heavier drugs. And therefore, if you follow this train of thought, and there's been a lot of scholarly documentation on this, what you end up doing by prohibiting a minor drug like marijuana, you end up creating a demand for things like methamphetamine and other really far more deadly drugs. And this, we saw this during the 1920s with alcohol prohibition. You bring in authority, you bring in the fist of government to outlaw alcohol. Well, most of the alcohol was beer and wine consumption until you bring in this, you know, this fist of authority, and then you start to punish people for beer and wine consumption and transportation and sale and so forth. And then it becomes more profitable to only deal in hard liquor, and you actually take people who would routinely use beer, you make it just as dangerous for them to get a smaller quantity of a stronger alcohol, and you actually create more alcohol addicts by making the by forcing the market into making the heavier alcohol more available than the lighter alcohol. And so now take the reverse side of this. Let's see if I can sew this together. When the government cracks down on the FBI and tells them, you're not going to do this anymore, but then allows the FBI to exist and continue to do what it does, then all it does is take the FBI and it ratchets up the their intensity on wanting to make sure that no witnesses talk and make sure that nobody can break in and make sure nobody's going to rat them out to the government and make sure that the FBI can do what it wants to do it secretly. And now all of a sudden, instead of, you know, if it's equally, if it's just as easy to kill a person as just break up their marriage and discredit them, then all of a sudden you have an incentive provided by government influenced onto the FBI to cause them to be just as likely to kill somebody as to just disrupt them. And so, you know, the existence of the FBI is the problem, not how much Congress tries to regulate them. And as, of course, now we know, now that all the years have gone by, we know that the FBI is doing the same shenanigans now as it was in the late 60s and early 70s, and all the efforts of Congress together, and even the death of J. Edgar Hoover, this horrible human being, even he was not the true source of all this evil. It was that you have an agency whose business model it is to bother people, get into their business, try to expose them, try to make criminals where there are no criminals so that they can justify their own existence. Mm-hmm.
Right. There's nothing that's beyond the pale when it comes to the FBI, and I think everyone has to keep that in the back of their mind when they're thinking of reform, especially through legislation, because the thing is, it doesn't matter. They're going to do these things. They're not a powerful organization. And so, for example, what they learned after these break-ins in 1971 was that they needed to boost up their physical security. And now it's going to be very difficult to do the same types of tactics that people use physical files. For instance, now everything's kind of in electronic form. So this presents a new challenge to activists that are trying to uncover, these government secrets. And so now I would think, a better way to do that would be to get on the inside of these organizations or be someone who's already on the inside and has a change of heart, like Bradley Manning, who joined the service and then realized that things were not as they seemed. And, Chelsea Manning is what she prefers to be called, and went to great lengths and is in prison right now, went to great lengths to expose what the military was doing. I think that's going to become more and more necessary if activists are wanting to uncover these actual atrocities, because we know they're happening now. Just like people knew in the 60s and 70s that the FBI was explicitly trying to break up activist groups and stall their activism, it's still going on today in slightly more subtle ways. And I guess for a lot of people, it is a bit of a struggle because you've seen these activists reveal this information, and even people like Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning revealing this at great personal sacrifice. And what is the public sentiment about it? I don't know that the public is as outraged as they really should be. I don't know. Maybe that's just my perception of things. It seems like there's definitely a lot of outrage to go around for various topics. But when it comes down to what really matters, is our military unlawfully killing people in other countries? Is our government spying on us and looking through all of our emails and collecting the metadata and collecting all this information from our personal electronics? Do people care about this? I feel that people should care more. In the case of the 1971 activists, the officially called the Citizens Commission to Investigate the FBI, I do sincerely hope that Edward Snowden is able to escape prosecution in the U.S. These people were able to evade the FBI for since 1971, basically, and they just recently came out a couple years ago. So it can be done as far as exposing government lies and counterintelligence measures. It definitely can be done, but you do have to be very careful and ensure that you have an exit strategy. Basically, that you have to use different techniques now than you were able to in the past.
Yeah, I agree. Exit strategy. Let's talk a little bit about exit strategy when we get back from this break. We're going to head out to the market. Folks, stick with us, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, this is Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to The Freedom Fiends on the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
We'll be right back.
Freedom Fiend. So we were teasing about the concept of an exit strategy before the break. Jim is back with us. We're having some technical difficulties, so you'll probably hear some background noise. What we've had to do is Jim had to rig up a coffee can with a large guitar wire, and that runs over to a transformer that was outside of his window. And we're bouncing the signal off of his neighbor's satellite dish. And so that's how we're having to do this. So we are getting a little bit of background noise. But so an exit strategy. So what is an exit strategy? So let's say you're involved in some kind of clandestine activity, and you're gonna plan a break-in into an FBI office, or you're gonna plan a break-in into a computer system, or you have gotten some kind of information and you want to release it to the public. Anytime you're doing any kind of an operation like this, it's really wise to have an exit strategy. And an exit strategy can be anything from, like, you might be planning on, a getaway car. That's technically an exit strategy. An exit strategy could be, getting your passport lined up, getting the tickets to on an airplane, and getting all the stuff done so that you can get away if you need to go. Figuring out a route that you're going to drive to get away from point A to get to point B. All of these things are exit strategies, but also an exit strategy is like, what are we going to do if we get busted? How are we going to deal with this? Are we all going to stick together? What are the consequences if somebody rats us out? And thinking these things through has to always be an aspect of the operation. And that's what, that's one aspect of exit strategy. MK, can you think of anything that I'm missing on that topic?
Well, something, a good tool you might want to use if you're an activist, which activism is kind of shifted in some ways from the physical, like in the 1971 documentary of people breaking into government offices and physically taking the files, to more electronic-based whistleblowing. For example, what Edward Snowden did with the NSA, which was, stealing those electronic files. And something that he used to communicate with Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras was something called PGP, which is short for Pretty Good Privacy. And what it is it allows you to encrypt your emails. And there are a lot of really good tutorials on YouTube if you want to look this up. It's very easy to set your own email up to encrypt your communications between people. And this is unbreakable encryption. This is something that the government actually uses to protect their communication too. So as far as we know, it hasn't been broken. And it's a tool that, it may take you a little while to learn how to use. When Edward Snowden was trying to help teach Glenn Greenwald this, Glenn Greenwald actually had to find someone who's familiar with it and learn. But it does work. They were able to conceal their communications so that Edward Snowden was able to get out of the country, and he's still a free man, and I hope that he's able to remain that way. So if you're wanting to do more sophisticated attacks, if you're already on the inside of an organization and you're wanting to, get this crucial information out and also protect yourself, that might be a tool that you can use, to make sure that the government, because one thing that he discovered and one thing that I think a lot of us probably suspected was that the NSA was spying on our communications. So what do you think, Jim? Do you have anything to add as far as kind of tools?
Well, certainly encryption is something that we have now and that we can certainly rely upon. I like to use Signal on my iPhone, which works with RedPhone on Android phones, which is free encrypted phone communication. And it actually works pretty darn well, especially if you're on a Wi-Fi. It's pretty easy to use, and I like to use it with as many of my friends as possible just to put as much encrypted data out there as possible. Just just chew on that. I don't want to wait until I actually have something I need to keep confidential to start encrypting. And it's so easy, right? It's like it used to be kind of hard. Even PGP, you sort of, you know, you might have to get walked through it. It's not exactly as intuitive as it could be, depending on what mail program you're using. But, you know, once you set it up, it's easy to use. I use that with certain people. You know, but as far as exit strategies, I think there's some interesting ones we can talk about when we come back.
Stick with us through the break. Don't let the news drag you down. We'll be back with good news.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of lesser world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's fiendphone.com, FEENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiend Phone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibHair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. I'm MK Lords, and joining me today is Ben Stone and Jim Babb. And we are talking about activism, and we kind of started on exit strategies, and I guess we're going to pick up with that. So,
all right. Yeah, I wanted to mention, you were talking about things you need to be prepared for, like, you know, how do you be ready for the different possible outcomes, especially getting caught. And back to the media group in 1971, there was a couple involved, a young couple. They had three young children, and part of their exit strategy was talking with one of the relatives to find out who would be raising the children if they ended up going to jail for a long time.
Wow.
I mean, imagine how horrendous just that consideration would be. And you learn this in the documentary, and then he says, well, some people would have said, gosh, you know, how could you put your family in that kind of danger? Like, isn't that's so irresponsible? Like, how could you do that? And his conclusion that he came to is this: well, if we just focus on ourselves being safe, then the people that want to take control of this government and use it for evil, they will be safe and we will be in danger. So he did the equation. He said, I have to act. I have to take this risk, because the risk of not doing anything is even bigger. And I just think that's an amazing, amazing man.
Yeah.
Well, and I would wonder if having children would, you know, also influence decisions, so that, you know, maybe there wouldn't be as much government corruption in their time. So, because these people were very reform minded, and I think that they were, and their discoveries did lead to the church committee. So I'm wondering if this was something that, you know, they looked at as like, this could lead to some actual reform and, you know, maybe protect our children when they're growing up.
You know,
definitely.
When you have children, you do think about that. You think, you know, if I do nothing, or if I, you know, if I'm not effective in what I'm doing and this evil continues, then all I'm really doing, even if my life is comfortable and even if I'm not being picked on by the government or I'm not being investigated by the FBI or whatever, what I'm actually doing by sitting back and doing nothing is I'm allowing this to be pushed on to my children and my grandchildren and their children. And this thing gets worse and worse and worse. It doesn't get better. So what exactly am I pushing onto them? What did my great-great-grandfather give to me because he was unwilling to stand up to the Federal Reserve and because he was unwilling to do something to stop the Federal Reserve from infiltrating government back in, you know, 1913 or whatever it was? And, you know, how can I look forward to generations and say, hey, but I had a good life. Sorry if I left this for you.
Well, and there's a knowledge problem, too, sometimes. Is sometimes people just don't know that these things are going on and they don't even know that they can do things to push back. And I think when it comes to activists, they tend to be a little more conscious of government corruption, and especially in the case of these activists. And when you have that knowledge, it does compel you to want to show other people and want to share it and say, hey, like, this is not right. Something has to be done. So if you are an activist who does have the knowledge, you are even more compelled to do something about it. Whereas, like, people who aren't and don't really care, I mean, I don't know that they really have that same burden.
Well, one of the questions I asked Keith Forsyth, got to talk to him, I was really curious about the differences between that climate and today's climate, which seems so different. I was like, how is it possible? You know, you guys did over 300 actions against draft boards to destroy records. I'm like, wow, like, you know, where has this anti-war movement gone? Where is, you know, how did we get from there to here? And he had there were two big differences that he pointed out. He says, one was we had an incredible community of support. He says, right here in Philly, there were thousands of activists that we could be counted on. They would give you a place to stay, food. There was a network and a support base, he said, that really made what he was doing a lot easier. Now, granted, that support base wasn't going to be the one going to prison for 47 years. So I think he was kind of being modest about his own courage in that department. But I still think that was a big deal. But he also said, we believe that if we exposed wrongdoing, something would happen. Okay. And today, look at all the wrongdoing that's exposed today and nothing happens. Mm-hmm. Right. It would be like, why would you take these big risks to expose the wrongdoing and there's no church hearings, there's no public outcry. I mean, look at what Snowden did. As incredible as that is, most people really, I don't know if anybody even cares. I really don't. So I think that that's a big change that is rather unfortunate.
And he also said that it was one of, Snowden did, that it was also one of his biggest fears that he would release this information and that people wouldn't care. And, you know, I really hope that there's still more documents that are going to be leaked by Glenn Greenwald and other journalists. And I'm hoping that there's something, I guess, more significant. And to me, I mean, what's already been released should be horrifying and outrageous. But, I hope there will be something that gets released that maybe, you know, spurs people to actually care about these things, because they do have an effect on us, currently speaking, and they will have an effect on many generations to come. So it's important to be paying attention.
I mean, look at Chelsea Manning, you know, like, will Chelsea Manning ever get out of jail? It's heartbreaking to see what has happened there. This is a person that should be honored in parades and receive medals and applause from around the world, not be rotting in a cell.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then we've got politicians who, I don't know, might as well name names, you know, Rand Paul, who will get up and grandstand these issues and talk about how, you know, I'm going to stop this. Something has to be done. I'm the guy that's going to come up here, vote for me for president, and I'll fix all this stuff. And yet he's right in the bucket with all the other ones who want Manning to go to jail. So, and how we wouldn't even know about that. Well, there was a lot of us that suspected this stuff, but the general public wouldn't know anything about the NSA spying, and without, you know, without Manning's stuff and Snowden's stuff, the general public wouldn't know about the abuses in the military and what was going on. And yet this same politician who's saying, well, here's the answer, more politics. The government has created a problem. I'm with the government. I'm here to fix it. And so many people just blindly go, oh, okay, well, that's being covered. I'll go back and get a hamburger at McDonald's now. I'm busy.
Yeah, and you've kind of seen...
what a joke.
Right. I wonder, you've seen a diminishment in direct action activism, too. If you look back to the 70s, these people who were breaking into these draft offices, this is direct action-based activism. And now it's people seem to become more reliant on reforms and, well, we just need to, which nothing against the people who are, trying to force the laws to go in a less bad way, but I just don't see how you can use the same institution that passed the laws, the unjust laws in the first place, to fix itself and regulate itself. It does this. It'd be interesting to see more direct action based. And I think in some ways Occupy was an attempt at that, but it was a very unorganized attempt, and there was some direct action involved in that, but you don't see these kind of mass movements anymore either. You don't see these mass actions. I mean, you're not going to see, like with the Camden 28, you're not going to see 30 people, hack into the NSA database and try to collect more information, that route. Maybe sometimes you will, like Anonymous is a group that does things like that, and they're focused kind of more on social issues. But yeah, it would be kind of nice to see more direct action based activism, and maybe less, we're just going to hope that Rand Paul fixes everything by standing and talking to Congress for several hours in a row. That's not how these things are fixed.
To say he's
actually stopping the NSA by doing that, the hubris of that is just beyond me.
Like they care what he says. Like they even care. Like they even care if the Patriot Act is extended or not. Like that has the slightest limit to what they're going to do. That it's so non-relevant to their agenda. And to see people like get all excited about, I don't even know what, but was the Patriot Act extended? Was it not extended? I don't even know.
Well, did you see that massive eye roll by Lindsey Graham? There's this GIF out that like during Rand Paul's filibuster, Lindsey Graham is in the foreground and he has this massive eye roll as he's talking. It's like, that is what they think of you.
Yeah.
That is what they think of you. That is
the truth. It's like, oh, we have to sit here and go through this charade.
Yeah.
Oh, the indignity of having to act like somehow this is relevant when we all know as soon as this is over, we're going to go back. We're going to get our checks from special interest. We're, it's business as usual. Can we just please get on with this stupid shade? I mean, that's what they think. They just think we are nothing but cattle, just cattle to be managed, cattle to be used, slaughtered, milked, skinned. We're nothing but a resource for them.
Also think about this. This stuff that we're talking about that happened in 1971 and the infiltration of the KKK, using the FBI, using the KKK to commit crimes, using the KKK to kill people. All of this stuff was being done by the FBI before the Patriot Act existed. The CIA experimentations where they were randomly just giving drugs to really wild mind psychotic drugs to people that didn't know it, didn't know they were being experimented on. All that kind of stuff was happening before the Patriot Act was going on. So, if we think that, oh, well, the politician's going to get the Patriot Act slowed down or maybe slightly modified, so what? You're straining at a gnat while swallowing a camel.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben, what do you think the effect was of the Citizens Commission to investigate the FBI? We know there was a big deal at the time, but did it extend? How far did that extend? Or what were the, maybe when we come back, you can tell us what you think the actual outcome of this was.
And we will come back after this little trip to the market. Stick with us.
listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends.
You with us, MK?
Ah, yeah.
So, worms. We're having a few technical difficulties, a little bit of background noise there, and we're doing the best we can with talking through tin cans over guitar wires and through stolen satellite service, but we're going to try to make it through. So before the break, James had asked what the long-term effects here are, you know, is it really worth it? Is it worth going through all the risk and all the everything to try to do this kind of stuff? And in reference specifically to the 1971 break-in. And in ways, you know, I look back and I think about a lot of the activism that was done in the late 60s and early 70s. And their hearts were in such a good place. They wanted peace. They wanted freedom. They wanted to be treated equally. They wanted all the right stuff. And so their hearts were all in the right place on this stuff, but so often their philosophies had serious flaws, or their methods were seriously flawed. And in many times it cost them everything from, you know, from their lifestyle to, you know, all the way up to their lives. Some of these people died. You think about who, all the people, not just the famous ones, not just the Kennedys and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, but there was so many people that died trying to explain to the general public how bad these things were and how bad the government's actions were and how the lies that the government had used to get America into the Vietnam War. There were people, so many lives destroyed trying to expose this stuff. And you stand back and you look at it and you say, was it worth it? Was it worth the fight? Was it worth losing their lives and, you know, fortunes and spending lifetimes in jail and accused of crimes they didn't commit? And having to spend years and years in prison fighting these accusations before they could show that they were actually innocent and stuff. And, you know, in ways, it was worth it. It was worth, because there's so many of the things that we take for granted now in our understanding of how evil government is and how the government did lie about getting America into Vietnam War and how the government did lie. Like when key moments when presidents would openly lie and say, we are absolutely not in Cambodia. We are not, we have not violated, you know, our agreement with our friends in Cambodia. And then 6 or 8 months later, the news comes out that, in fact, the United States had been actively bombing Cambodia for months and months and months, and they just didn't admit to it. So was it worth it? Was it worth? And then you look through the 70s and through the 80s and the 90s, and now here we are in the 2015 era. And so many people have no idea that the government's knee-jerk reaction to any situation is always to lie, and that we are not going into wars. We collectively are not going into wars because someone is, you know, some bad guys over there on the other side of the world living in a mud hut somewhere.
Fiend phone. Fiend phone.
Are a threat to us. Jim's coming back in. We dropped him for a moment there. But, you know, have we made any progress over these years and through all the sacrifice made? And I think we have, even though not all of the activities were profitable and not all the sacrifices ended up resulting in a positive gain. In the long run.
Yeah, and
go ahead, Megan.
I was going to say, you mentioned the part about philosophy, and these activists, their hearts were totally in the right place. And I think they were motivated out of a genuine belief that the system could work if you could only expose some of the bad parts of it and push for reform with the good parts of it. And I think that's fundamentally flawed when you look at the history of the United States as a whole, going back even to the very beginning, and the lies that it was built upon. And you look at what presidents and congressmen and all of these politicians have done, and there should be a very, very strong distrust of anything the government is involved in, especially foreign policy-wise. And as far as positive outcomes of this, for example, when COINTELPRO was exposed, they were able to use it and reference it in certain trials for people who were caught up in the system, different civil rights activists, sometimes successfully and sometimes not successfully. For instance, in the case of Geronimo Pratt, I mean, he spent decades in jail before his conviction was finally overturned. Through with the evidence that the FBI purposefully basically messed with this trial. I mean, and he had to learn these things himself, and he had to come out against this. And so in some ways it helped some individuals, but overall, I don't know that it changed the public's distrust in maybe a healthy or productive way.
Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Evidently.
Ben Stone with MK Lords and James Babb, and we've got some connection problems. Just as mentioned, it's got a little bit of static in the background. But MK, right before the break, you were expressing a thought. Did you want to finish that?
Yeah. So what I was saying is we were talking about the Citizens Commission to investigate the FBI, and these are the people who ended up discovering the documents that COINTELPRO were in. And, you know, this operation to destabilize activist groups and kind of the outcomes of that. Was it good? Was it bad? And I will say, as far as the initial actions of it, I completely support it. It takes guts of steel to do what these people did, to sacrifice, you know, their lives, basically, and their freedom to expose what the FBI was doing to the country and the world. And it would be nice if there was more of a healthy distrust of government agencies that came from that. While I wouldn't dissuade them from doing this initial break-in where they found these documents and that were country-free and have more fair trials, I just wonder if it caused the FBI to just crack down on their security even more and go even more underground, and or even make this information harder to access. For example, you could still do freedom of information requests, but they don't release everything all the time, and those can be denied in some cases. So how free are we? How much have we learned from this? The biggest lesson is that the FBI absolutely can't be trusted.
Right.
And several other government agencies, too. I mean, the CIA, all the coups that they've been involved in. Pretty much every level is entirely corrupt. And, you know, I can't really believe in reform by the organizations that are doing these things.
You know, we've talked about so far in this stuff that's been revealed. And this is not conspiracy theory, foil hat, crazy stuff, you know, your lunatic uncle raving at the dinner table. This is stuff that's well documented, and much of the documentation has been brought in at great risk to the individuals who were exposing it. And we've talked about how the FBI and other groups like CIA and others infiltrated peaceful groups They divided people, divided friends, divided couples, spread rumors, spread lies, to actually divided married couples, and had and got entertainment value out of that, and joked about, you know, how they had actually gone in and divided up married couples. They intentionally created paranoia in groups that were peaceful groups, including like the Boy Scouts, targeted assassinations, targeted arrests, targeted harassment. They were involved in discrediting individuals. Like, we know what they did with Martin Luther King, how they spread rumors about him. They threatened him. They told him, they actually went to the point of telling him, giving him a timeline. You need to commit suicide by this date. I mean, that's reprehensible. And this is what the government does. They follow people. They set them up. They create a situation where the person starts to think, am I being watched? Am I being followed? Or am I just going crazy? Megan, you mentioned the phrase gaslighting at one point, and that's really what they do. They pick out an individual, or they have, and gaslight them. Mm-hmm. Do you want to go into that a little bit?
Yes. So this has happened with several people in, for instance, the civil rights movement. And I'll talk about what they did with Stokely Carmichael. Stokely Carmichael was an incredible activist. If you can go back and look up some of his speeches, he was very active in the Black Panthers, and he was trying to get them to work with other activist groups as a kind of show of solidarity. And what the FBI basically did is something called bad jacketing, where they sent letters to other members of the Panthers and these other organizations, starting feuds between Stokely and other prominent members like Eldridge Cleaver and, the other Panthers. And they basically made it to where everyone in these organizations distrusted Stokely, and they expelled him from these institutions. And they were like, we don't trust you. And this happened with Geronimo Pratt also. He was accused of a murder that he didn't commit. In fact, the FBI set this up. And what they basically did is he couldn't get any support from the other Panthers after, his trial. And even during his trial, they all backed away from him because the FBI had done so much internal damage as far as them distrusting each other that there were only, I believe one of his only supporters was Kathleen Cleaver, who was helping him legally. And all the other ones wouldn't support him because the FBI had done such a good job of discrediting him. And probably the most disturbing thing that I see when it comes to these information leaks, kind of in modern day, is you hear the same exact commentary from the kind of right-wing pundits. These are terrible people who are trying to hurt our freedom and national security. Like, there were people calling for Edward Snowden to be hanged for exposing that the NSA was spying on American citizens. And that's appalling. And the same arguments were made. You can go back and look at even KKK leaders were saying the same thing that your Bill O'Reilly's and your Sean Hannity's are saying now. And it's disturbing. And there is still a large segment of the population who believes that and believes that these activists who are trying to set people free with information are the bad guys, and that the government is actually the good guys, which is insane, because the government does have this track record of, and they're still doing it today. The thing is, there's also this belief that COINTELPRO happened back then, and it was this event, this one-time thing. But COINTELPRO has continued under various other names, and I think it's continued to present day. They just don't call it COINTELPRO, but you still see the FBI entrapping people, and you still see the other government agencies involved in all sorts of horrible setups. For example, the DEA with the Silk Road case with Ross Ulbricht, they were the ones who set up the entire scheme to frame him for murder. And this is what they do. They continue to do this. And it's just amazing that a lot of people, probably more than half the population just hasn't learned this lesson, that you cannot trust these agencies with just about anything. I mean, they're literally just here. They're criminal organizations made to set people up and create crimes that weren't going to be committed and create criminals that wouldn't have existed otherwise.
Yeah, the Gunwalker Fast and Furious scandal is a good example of that just happened, not that long ago, where the United States government was funneling guns into Mexican drug cartels under the guise that, oh, well, we're doing a good thing. No, you're not. You know, and then the scandal comes out, and there were actually people that their lives were destroyed over that. And this happened in this generation for us to see. And still, most people, if you walk up to them and say, do you know what the gun scandal was, the Fast and Furious, they think you're talking about a movie or something. They have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, and another thing, too, HSBC Bank was found laundering money to Mexican drug cartels and drug traffickers. And, you know, this was involved in weapons transfers, too. I mean, thousands of people were killed in Mexico over these programs. This is something you don't hear, and this isn't a conspiracy theory. This actually happened. And it's something to consider, you know, when we talk about, oh, well, you know, who's going to be the next president? And, you know, none of that stuff really matters when these agencies have the power to do these things. It doesn't matter who's president or who's there to combat this. There's education, but ultimately, education doesn't have the same, you know, force of violence behind it. Or, do you have Jim back? Or,
Jim,
would you want to give him perspective on this, Jim?
I am. Can you hear me?
We can. Go ahead.
Yeah.
The you know, I just wanted to reemphasize what Megan had said about how, you know, these people had the right ideas. They had the right. They identified the correct problems, but they thought they could reform this system. And I think that was their fatal flaw. They're like, we're going to fix it. And instead of fixing it, they really, you know, needed to be thinking about scrapping it. During the documentary, one of the participants even commented that, you know, that it that the whole he almost had a regret that it sort of made people. That made people question the whole system. It's the level of cynicism, and he regretted that. Now, I think we can celebrate that. I think what they did was an incredible service by making people maybe move one step closer to just scrapping the whole thing.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there does need to be a healthy degree of cynicism when it comes to these agencies and really what they're capable of, too. I think there is kind of a mindset with a lot of people that, oh, the government would never do these things when we have hundreds of years of history showing otherwise. And, you know, I still commend these people for their actions. I think they did the right thing, morally speaking. And that's the hardest step to take, really, is taking the actual action. There's always going to be unintended consequences no matter what you do, but knowing that something's wrong and taking that initial action to correct it should be commended.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, and it is a huge risk to do these kind of things. It's really smart to go into them, you know, knowing the risk ahead of time, thinking it through, what's going to happen? Am I willing to lay down, you know, am I willing to pay the cost of getting caught in this scheme or whatever? And balancing that out with, you know, what's the future that I want in my mind? And what path am I going to take to actually get there? And is the thing that I'm doing leading me towards that path, or is it just going to end up with me stuck in jail over some stupid thing that in the long run doesn't really accomplish what I think it's going to accomplish? Because I think a flaw in modern day, at least, activism is kind of this unspoken thought that almost anything you do to get yourself arrested or get attention upon yourself is good. But that's not necessarily the case. I mean, the more wise we can be about these things, you know, the resource of activists that we have at our disposal is very limited, and to waste that resource is really kind of a real loss for us.
And it's hard to know if you have that kind of solidarity and that support system if you do want to put yourself in this position. So maybe we can kind of talk about Assata Shakur a little bit after the break. I've mentioned her on the program before, but this was someone who's also framed by COINTELPRO, and there's a very different outcome.
Yeah. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends, coming back for redemption in the third act, and this has been a really good show. We've talked a lot about activism and the sacrifices different activists have made throughout history, and talked about exit strategies, and I want to end on a positive note. Well, it's positive for some people and not for others, because this is a pretty contentious topic, what I'm going to go into. Some of you may have heard of Asada Shakur. She was an activist in the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Army. And COINTELPRO actually, one of the parts of COINTELPRO specifically targeted her as an individual. And the FBI basically framed her for several crimes, and she was found not guilty, actually, with several of these crimes, and they ended up, she was accused of a robbery, and it ended in this manhunt where she was shot and captured, and some police officers were shot in this too. So she was put on trial for killing a police officer, and she was found guilty by a jury of not her peers. It was basically a really messed up trial. It turns out she was probably physically incapable of shooting the officers due to her injury at the time. So there's concern that, this whole situation was fabricated by the police, or certain parts of it, at least. And she was thrown in jail, and her group, the Black Liberation Army, ended up breaking her out of jail and got her escape to Cuba, where she resides now, and where there still is, I believe it's still $1 million bounty for her that the FBI has on her. This is, she's been in Cuba for decades now, and this goes to show this, whether you agree with her actions or not, again, this is very contentious, this does go to show what a successful support group looks like. You know, if you're going to be engaged in this activity, you want to be around people who you can count on to break you out of jail if need be. Now, that's become a lot more difficult since this happened. The security has been ramped up, but it is an interesting thing because she's still free. And just like these people that we were talking about in the documentary 971, they weren't found. They only came out just a couple of years ago. And so it does go to show that if you are engaged in activism and you do have a good support group, you could get away with a lot of these things. You could get away with exposing the government, but it is always a huge risk. Do y'all have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, you don't have to be the one that takes these huge risks to still be to play a key role because of that support community. Like you said, we need to build the support base that makes these things possible. And when an action like this happens, we need to have a network in place. We need to have secure communication channels. We need to have safe houses. We need to have ways of handling the exit strategy later. And, you know, it's very easy to play a supporting role, even if you're not willing to go break into the FBI. I don't think there's many of us have that kind of courage. I know I'm a big chicken, so that's not the kind of thing I'm going to want to do. You know, but you know what? I would want to support them. And we also need to make sure that when these things happen, that the word gets out about them, that when wrongdoing is exposed, that people understand this is the true nature of government. This is not something we're going to tweak and we're going to fix and we're going to go to trial and correct. This is something that when these things happen, we need to let people know you're seeing the real thing. Okay.
Right.
You've just peeked behind the curtain. This is the real thing. Understand that's what it is. And we're not going to polish it. We're not going to reform it. We're gonna abolish it. You know, I think that's a way we can all make these types of actions more effective.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We're coming into our last moments in today's show, and today's been a little bit different flavor of a show than your normal Freedom Fiends show, because normally we have a lot more lighthearted approach. But sometimes, not every time, but sometimes it's important that we really take a good, hard look into the eye of this beast, this giant monster that's taken over, and the government being that monster, and really ask ourselves the hard questions and really discuss what the nature of this thing is and what we can do about it. And, you know, again, looking towards the future, every system, no matter what the circumstances are, every system runs its course. And this system, this monster, this government has about run its course. And if we can look to the future with something positive, that's what it is. Folks, thanks for listening. Jim, thanks for coming on the show. MK, it's great talking to you guys.
Thanks for having me.
Great being with you guys.
Freedom Fiends.